Welcome to the Global Research News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman, brought to you by globalresearch.ca. Today my guest is Ian Douglas. Ian is editor, and he's also correspondent for the Cairo-based Al-Haram Weekly. Ian is also a visiting professor in the Department of Political Science at Najah National University in Nablus in Palestine in the West Bank. And Ian is a member of the B. Russell's, you could call it Brussels, but it's B. Russell's Tribunal, and it's spelled capital B, capital R, USS, ELS, the B. Russell's Tribunal. It's named after the noted philosopher, mathematician, anti-war and anti-imperialist activist Bertrand Russell. He was with us until 1970. Very, very distinguished man. The tribunal was established in 1967 during the height of the Vietnam War, and it was done to investigate war crimes. And indeed, there were many, the way they are in all wars. The tribunal is a hearing committee, most recently against the Iraq War and Bush administration imperialism. But the work never ends, and it's now focusing on Obama as he continues the same agenda with perhaps more wars planned. Let's hope not. We have too many. We need to find a way to end them. It's very disturbing that the occupation of Iraq continues and the violence is picking up again. No surprise. My goodness, I wrote about it numerous times in articles. It will continue. It can ebb and flow, but it will continue because Iraqis, just like Afghans, don't take too kindly to foreign occupiers, especially oppressive ones like we tend to be. Certainly the Afghans are proving a lesson that many foreign invaders learned years ago, including the Brits, who should know better because they were driven out a century or more ago. And now they're back in again, and they'll be driven out again, and will be driven out. That's the way it'll go. But a lot of people will suffer and die in the interim. Ian, are we connected?
Yes, I'm here, Stephen.
Oh, I welcome you to the program. I get a little carried away with this stuff. I think we all should. The purpose of this program is to inform listeners of the kind of information on the most important topics that they never get to the U.S. media, really not the mainstream media, and most everywhere, but the media here. I'm getting well up in years, Ian, and I've seen a media here that never was all that great, but comparing the way it was decades ago to the way it is now, it seems like night and day. I once described it as going from Cronkite, meaning Walter Cronkite, to Couric, meaning Katie Couric on CBS, their lead anchor. I guess she is. I don't follow them. An entertainer posing as a news journalist on a major network. She doesn't know a thing about what she's reporting, but there she is. Cronkite was a distinguished guy. It's pretty dismal. But, Ian, I welcome you warmly. I've dominated the first few minutes. I apologize. There it is. In a moment, the first break. When we hear that soft music, it means the break is coming. So let's take that and come back, and then let's talk about the tribunal. We'll be right back.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
To the News Hour. I'm on with Ian Douglas of the B. Russell's Tribunal. One more word from me, then you take over, Ian. I just want to say to you that it was a great honor for me when Dirk Adriansen asked me to become a member of the Tribunal. That was indeed a highlight moment for me. I am very, very honored to be among such a distinguished group of people, including my co-host, Michelle Chosedowski. So I thanked Dirk by email, and I thank you over the phone in person.
I think it's our honor, Stephen. I mean, we know the work that you do on Palestine, on Arab issues, you know, and so we're very happy to have people of your insight, commitment to be part of our effort.
Well, I'm delighted with what I'm doing. I must say it's the way I decided to spend my retirement, Ian, and what a glorious way. It sure beats the usual things that retirees usually do that really don't do much of anything, including people in my building. I bumped into one neighbor heading off with the most enormous suitcases I ever saw. I had to ask them if they had a body in one of them. They were going to Las Vegas for a week. My goodness, it looked like they were packing up and moving out with all the luggage they had. But aside from that, Las Vegas, my goodness. well, I guess if anybody wants to go there, that's fine. It's really not my cup of tea. I'd rather stay here and do what I'm doing, like beyond the year with you and talking about vital issues. These are the important things. If we don't do it, Ian, my goodness, we keep sinking lower and lower.
Sure.
Talk about the tribunal, it's a difficult moment. You're there, and you've been at meetings, and explain what goes on.
You mean in meetings of the Bristol Tribunal?
Right. I think you just had a session. The chronology leaves me a little bit, but in recent weeks there was a get together. Weren't you in Brussels?
Yeah. You know, the Brussels Tribunal, just to give a brief overview, and then I can talk about what we're presently doing.
Okay.
You know, it was constituted essentially as a, you know, as a moral refusal of the illegal, horrific invasion and occupation of Iraq. It had its first public session in 2004, which was a public people's tribunal, an interrogation of the core rationality behind the neoconservative movement and the so-called Project for a New American Century, which seems, by the way, to have disappeared from the World Wide Web.
Oh, can I tell you?
Web page, but in any case, the rationality that was behind the invasion, the rationality that is at the core of the neoconservative reactionary movement in the United States, and its first session was in 2004 to be a public tribunal to judge the criminality of this idea. 20 or so other sessions of what became the World Tribunal. The Brussels Tribunal was the opening session of the World Tribunal. Thereafter, held sessions in different cities around the world that united national anti-war movements and interrogated certain subjects, the legality of resistance, the human rights situation, the contravention of humanitarian law under occupation, and so on and so forth. And this culminated in 2005 in Istanbul with the conclusion of the World Tribunal on Iraq. But the Brussels Tribunal was committed and continued to do its work. It believes that it has to be in support of the Iraqi people and its legal and legitimate struggle against the occupation and for liberation and independence until that is achieved. So we continue our work very much in terms of monitoring the occupation, establishing campaigns around particular issues that are of crucial importance, trying to reveal the logic and a sense of American strategy in Iraq and as it relates to broader issues in the Arab world. As it relates to U.S. Attempts for global hegemony and so on. And what we just did in Brussels was, you know, every year we've done something to mark to commemorate this illegal invasion. And so we had the second public session of the tribunal. We had events in the European Parliament, in the Belgian Parliament, and in two key cultural institutions in Brussels, essentially attempting to get Iraq back on the agenda. As you say, when you reflect on media, you know, there's a massive problem right now. The Pew Research Center, for example, its analysis is that Iraq takes up 2% of media coverage so far in 2009, which is down from 4% in 2008, which is down from 16% in 2007. So you can see that Iraq is falling off the agenda, whereas the reality in Iraq is horrific as ever.
Oh, indeed. Ian, are you talking about Western media or U.S. media?
This is particularly U.S. media.
U.S. media is terrible, and when they have a report, I don't spend much time looking at what they're doing, except what I need to do some media criticism and to quote usually from print, not from television, but usually the kind of reports, the TV reports especially, would be absolute fiction, like reports about progress and violence being down and people getting back to more normal lives. I mean, it sounds like Alice in Wonderland. I mean, it simply isn't true in any respect. And more recently, the violence has been picking up again. And the reason, I guess, is because of the impressiveness of the occupation. A lot of forces were bought off. If you can't defeat the opposition, then put them on the payroll. So they were put on the payroll, but then they changed the arrangement, apparently. I haven't written about this. The little I know about it, they changed the arrangement to give money to leaders in different areas like Anbar province and then let them do what they want with the money. They can they can put it in Swiss bank accounts or they can pay out amounts to these people who used to be the resistance. Well, apparently they're putting too much in Swiss bank accounts and people are getting very upset. And they're not getting anything. They have the same problems they had a year ago, 2, 3, 4 years ago. And the situation is dismal, absolutely dismal. One more comment to the Project for a New American Century, PNAC, hasn't gone away, Ian. Its new name is, if you're not aware of this, its new name is the Foreign Policy Initiative. The old name was so tainted, they had to get rid of it. So this is the new name, but the players, the objective is still the same. It's U.S. world dominance by war, by any other means.
Sure. No, I'm aware of that change. In a way, I want to comment on one thing, though. As you said about the corruption and the buying and the different forms of bribery, you know, this is something which runs through the core of the occupation. Lately, going hand in hand with the so-called surge, was an attempt to buy off certain groups and to constitute certain militias to balance off other militias. The whole thing is ridiculous from the beginning. The militias that were actively killing the members of the resistance that were targeting Sunnis as Sunnis, all of those are constituted, paid for, supported, protected by the military forces of the occupation, as well as the political forces, the media forces, and so on and so forth. You know, so, what has happened is we've seen is just the occupation has got continually shifting alliances. So it attacks one group for the moment, and then it changes and attacks another group, and then it changes again and attacks another group. The reality is that what has happened in the last 6 years is a systematic military attack on the Iraqi people, on its conceptions of identity, of citizenship, and this is overwhelmingly supported by the imperial mainstream media that pick up and parrot without any reflection or any understanding whatsoever of the reality or the history of Iraq, categories such as Sunni, Shia, Kurd, and so on and so forth, that until now continue to parrot. The thing is, it's a vast illusion because the occupation has failed. It has failed. The Iraqi people and its resistance made it fail. At this point, we have President Obama who claims to want to withdraw from Iraq, but if he doesn't recognize the reality of the impossibility of his position, then he can actually withdraw from Iraq. If he doesn't recognize the Iraqi people's resistance and the resistance of its sole representative, he cannot actually withdraw from Iraq.
Oh, indeed. And everything you say about Iraq, Ian, you could say the same thing about Afghanistan. We have a caricature of a guy that we essentially installed as president, Karzai, a former CIA asset, not an agent, but an asset, a former employee of Unocal Oil Company. He's our guy, as long as he obeys what we tell him to do, does what we tell him to do. And then the so-called Northern Alliance, whatever this is, again, buying off tribal chieftains, putting them on the payroll. Oh, my goodness. We have another break coming up, Ian. Let's take that, and we'll come back, and we'll continue. We'll be right back.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Ian Douglas of the Brussels Tribunal. Ian, I think whether we look abroad, the occupations of Iraq and Afghanistan, what's happening right here in the U.S., I followed Obama all the way through the campaign. It didn't surprise me a bit that we literally didn't miss a beat when Bush walked out and Obama walked in. And I referred to what was going on as continuity, or George Bush's third term, and it really is turning out much to be that way, where he's following the same script. My goodness, just on the war front, he's got the same Secretary of Defense, this outrageous man, absolutely outrageous man, and he's still continuing the war effort. And Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State, a very, very belligerent woman, extremely hawkish in her views, and against everything that you and I believe in, the same for Gates, and you could go up and down his appointments and every single important position, whether it's domestic, foreign, economic, security, you name it, and it really is just an outrageous group of top-tier rogues, is all you can call them. I think criminals is a better description. And these are the people who are governing us. And Obama's, I haven't checked his approval rating lately, but I think it's still fairly decent. He's been in office about 2.5 months now. Sooner or later, people will catch on. I mean, they should have caught on already. They're hurting so much economically, and they see that there's great anger here about the enormous amount of money that's just literally handed over to Wall Street and big insurance companies and whoever else they want to give it to on the corporate side. But there's been virtually nothing done for millions and millions and millions of people who are going through the greatest hardships of their lives, losing their life savings, their jobs, their homes. And it's literally been nothing more than crumbs done for them. I've written about it, and it's so outrageous. I mean, sooner or later, this has to bubble to the surface with very, very deep and justifiable anger. So you get angry Iraqis and Afghans, and you get angry Americans. And it's because we have a government that doesn't serve the people. It wages aggressive wars abroad, and it essentially wages a war against its own people. What can I say?
Sure. You know, I think what people need to understand is that, firstly, that it's not a matter of the personalities that hold any particular office, and in this situation, it's not a change of tactics that's necessary. It's an overwhelming review of American strategic ends. The reality is, I think, at this, in this time in history that we live in, is that, you know, politics more or less since the end of the 20th century is part of that system, is part of the nature of the combination of media, industry, military, and so on, begins in actual fact this to, Abdullah Albayati said this in Brussels, I think he's right, it begins to speculate on the lives of people. It begins to wager, can we invade here? Can we do this? Well, how about this? And then groups, interest groups and people and so on and so forth, that defend particular interests, which have got nothing to do with the life of the their own population, their own community, whatever, invest in that project. Ultimately, what we see happening now is a kind of financial blowback from this massive, illegal, horrific invasion and occupation of Iraq, which is built on foreign credit. You know, I was there in the UK when the first sort of wave of this financial crisis sort of broke back in, I forget, September or whenever it was. And, you know, I was watching very closely because, you know, here is a situation where people begin to feel it materially in their lives. And there was not a single TV anchor, not a single discussant on any program that I watched. Taking note for about 2 weeks, actually made the link between the war in Iraq and this financial crisis and bubble and whatever that's exploded now and that is affecting people materially. I think sooner or later people are going to, just by trying to find out more, you know, and your work helps them, I think, is to understand exactly that relation, you know, and as you say, Obama has not changed fundamentally the policy. And if he was honest, he could do this very simply. He would just need to say publicly, as the president, not as a presidential candidate, the war was wrong. It was illegal. The Iraqi people have a right to redress and compensation. And we should recognize that the vast majority of the Iraqi people, the overwhelming majority of the Iraqi people, refuse the occupation. It is not in their interest. They have no interest in ceding the wealth of Iraq to foreign companies, and that it has to end, an unconditional withdrawal based upon the recognition of the Iraqi resistance. Further to which, if he was really honest, if he was, as people portray him, a second Kennedy or whatever, and I don't comment on Kennedy, but if he was really honest, then he would pursue the public prosecution of these of all officials that were linked to this project. They are criminal. They are complicit in systematic, overwhelming, massive war crimes.
Absolutely,
crimes against humanity. And an overwhelming crime.
Ian, I need to interrupt. We need to break again. We'll continue.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back. I'm on with Ian Douglas, the Brussels Tribunal. Oh, we're talking about the Iraq occupation, Afghanistan, what's happening here at home in America. U.S. hegemony, the U.S. imperial agenda, I guess, is how you can sum it all up, whether it's at home or abroad, Ian. And we just had a G20 meeting. Really, we go there. It didn't accomplish anything except to pledge to quadruple the IMF budget. The IMF is like a mafia boss. They don't go in to help countries. They go in literally to rape them, the way mafia bosses loan money, loan shark loans. They're so oppressive that they end up getting back more than they loan in the long run. And the IMF works. The enforcing agency of the big Western bankers to go in and literally entrap countries that do business with them in debt bondage, and the idea is to keep them there forever, So if any countries going through this can get themselves out of it, that's the best thing they can do. And I don't know how many countries are going to succumb to their very harsh terms. I think you and I know how they work. I mean, it really is outrageous. But there are so many countries in such trouble that we caused them the trouble that they're in. We sold them this junk, and we infested them with all kinds of toxic acids. Maybe they should have been smart enough to ask more questions. I don't know. But a lot of people bought the terrible, the really fraudulent stuff that we poured out. I don't know how much of it went out, Ian. Maybe trillions of dollars of it. But so much so that the banks that issued it didn't have a chance to offload it all. So they're stuck with many trillions of dollars of this toxic junk. And now we're looting the U.S. Treasury. It really is the most outrageous looting of national wealth in human history by a wide margin that will put the population of my country in hock forever. Forever. It'll take generations to pay this off. It's in so many trillions of dollars. And it won't work. It won't work. The plan won't work. And it's not being used for what publicly it's stated for. Oh, it's so outrageous. So it's part of the war we wage here at home compared to the wars we wage overseas. But you could wrap it all up and just call it the same old imperial agenda. World domination. Everybody, every place. We make the rules. I like the line that Noam Chomsky uses, that the rules of imperial management. We're boss, and what we say goes. It certainly is no laughing matter.
But I think that. By the way, excuse me, I think I was cut off before. It's difficult for me to hear when the break cuts in. But I think that the system that you describe, which many are aware of, and as well as millions in the global south that are living it, are living the destructive consequences of it, that in reality it can no longer work. The United States, for all of its power, cannot ultimately control the media. It cannot, and it cannot convince people on the ground in any one particular situation to confuse their own interests with the interests of the United States.
Oh, indeed. But they keep the game going as long as they can. What obsesses me here so much, Ian, is the power of distraction in America. It's just immense. The distraction of entertainment, whether it's movies, whether it's sports, surrounded by shopping malls that have innovative ways of being very seductive to get people in. They're not spending as much there anymore because they don't have money, but people just like to mill around and go out, and whether they can't buy as much as they used to, they still are out there and window shopping or doing whatever they want to do. And this very this constant seduction that goes on, and then on television, especially where most people spend so much of their time, it's commercialized to an extent so vastly more than it ever was in the past. Where it's almost like you turn something on and you're watching commercials that get interrupted by programming, but they try to make those very seductive, very clever, like entertaining, so that the people want to watch these because they entertain them while they're selling them things. And
I think, you know, if you look at the levels of alienation in the West, in terms of depression. Just a general dissatisfaction with the possibilities of life, you know, suicide rates, whatever, just general social disturbances. It's growing more and more. I think increasingly this is exposed, and increasingly I think there is a reaction to that. What's difficult in a sense right now is that we don't see the popular reaction. I mean, in my view, and I speak as someone born in the West, that, you know, I think it necessitates direct action, direct civil disobedience every day. You know, it is a system that cannot but distort the human being. In this situation, though, I mean, here is a situation in Iraq where the consequence of attempting to keep that system going is the illegal invasion and destruction of an entire country and over 1 million people dead since 2003 alone, a fifth of the population out because of the horrific destruction and the unworkable, ridiculous, disgustingly rude system of this political process imposed on people's heads. And, I mean, here we can actually see that in the struggle for the Iraqi people and in their victory in reality. Just it's an undeclared victory from the side of the aggressor until now. They haven't recognized that, but they should because they kind of keep going. You know, the whole system is unbalanced. And now with the financial crisis, as I say, I mean, people more and more can begin, or they're obliged to see where are the lines of this, where is it coming from?
Ian, you're absolutely right, and we need more robust resistance to what's going on here. I absolutely reject violence, but we need people doing more than just moaning, just occasionally getting out to a protest that isn't big enough, and when the protest is over, they go home and have dinner and maybe go to a movie or something. Well, that's not my idea of a protest.
The question becomes, what do you do? You know, and I think relative to Iraq, and, you know, here is a situation where there's a massive, overwhelming international crime of vast proportion, a Holocaust of vast proportion happening right in front of our eyes. If we don't act to sanction this, to prosecute, to criminalize it, then there's no deterrent, and it can happen again, and it will happen again.
It absolutely will. In this war, people don't think about this. This war began in August of 1990. There were no bombs dropping then, but within a couple of days, a few days at most, of when Saddam was seduced to go into Kuwait. That's a dirty story all by itself. He wanted another way. He didn't want to do that. It was an act of frustration that he finally did it. Like all other alternatives failed, and he did a stupid thing. He fell into a trap, and it's meant 20 years of hell for the Iraqis, preceded by 10 years of hell in the 1980s. Another war that with Iran that the U.S. really backed him mostly to fight, hoping both countries would destroy each other. Well, they killed about 1 million people. You know, what do we care about Iranians and Iraqis? We don't care at all. We don't care much about any. We don't care about our own people, so why should we care about people halfway around the world? But then the sanctions were put on a few days after he went into Kuwait. And then the mid-January 1991, we had that horrific Gulf War that killed at least 100,000 Iraqis. Some of them absolutely maliciously, willfully, for no reason at all, had no bearing on winning a war. I mean, we just slaughtered people like you would step on an ant on the sidewalk without even giving it a thought. And it continued all the way through the 90s with occasional bombings, Bill Clinton, and, of course, those horrific sanctions, and probably at least on the order of a few million Iraqis we murdered.
Yeah.
From 1991 to today, at least a few million, plus the absolute immeasurable human misery and utter destruction of a country. Iraq, as it existed 20 years ago, does not exist today.
Yeah.
I mean, this is one of the great crimes of history. When the true, honest history is written of this period, it will talk about one of history's greatest crimes. It'll rank right up there with the worst of what Hitler did, the worst of what Stalin did, the worst of what all the brutes of history did. And it continues, and you ask, for how much longer can this go on?
Exactly. And in this way, Stephen, you know, I don't want to leave the history to be written by a future historian. You know, I think that we, if we believe in our values, we have to participate in that writing of history, in a sense, the practical reality of history. And in this sense, although, you know, in our recent meeting in Brussels, we say occupation, yes, but in reality, as you say, it's genocide, year 19. And something has to be done about that.
Oh, it absolutely is genocide, and we're really doing it maybe a little more slowly in Afghanistan, but that really is genocide, too. And the poor Afghans, my God, for almost decade after decade after decade, they've lived under the most horrific conditions, whether outright a conflict from an invader or internal wars or terrible poverty and suffering. My goodness, those people, John Pilger speaks of Afghans as no other people being more long-suffering than them. Well, there are a lot of long-suffering people. I think of the Haitians for 500 years. I think of the Palestinians for over 60 years. That's another genocide that's ongoing. And honest people recognize it as genocide. I had an article I titled "Slow Motion Genocide," but these terrible crimes committed against these people, and they get away with it because no one seems to care. The great powers, and of course the other Arab states. My goodness, what'll they say if they're invaded? What will happen then? Will they speak up? Except for Syria and Iran. And the Hezbollah portion of the Lebanese government. Hezbollah is a legitimate part of the Lebanese government, which most people in the U.S. have no idea about. They take a stand against this. But where you are in Cairo, Mubarak, my goodness, I mean, we bribed him back in the 1970s with about $1 billion a year. You can buy a lot of loyalty for $1 billion a year.
For sure. You know, what can we say? I think, you know, if an alien landed and had no conception of what was going on with SWORD objectively, they would think in actual fact that these leaders, these so-called leaders, are somehow regarded by us as gods. You know, are they above human law? You know, where is the action? Well, we have to build it. I mean, we can say where is the action, but the point is that, you know, unless we do it, there is no action.
Well, you're absolutely right, Ian, and we have to write the history ourselves. I think that's an awfully important point. And just you're doing it now, and I'm on your mailing list, and I get your emails, and talking about the things that are going on in the context of what has gone on all these previous years. And I mean, this is such an outrageous story that if it were happening, I hear the U.S. is 50 states. If we lived in peace, say, in my home state of Illinois, but maybe the bordering state of Indiana, if this were happening there, my goodness, it would be daily headlines with very lengthy reports day after day about what are we doing to these people. Well, you know, they're white Christian Americans, so we're concerned about them. But who cares about Iraqis halfway around the world? Who cares about the Palestinians? There are no reports in our media about the Palestinians, except when after numerous Israeli crimes, somebody fires a rocket back in self-defense, and we call them terrorists. The victims are called terrorists, and the genociders are called the victims. This is the upside down world we live in, and we have to fight back against this.
I mean, can you imagine if a fifth of the population of the United States was displaced? Can you imagine the proportion of 1 million Iraqis, what it would be in the United States? I mean, it would be millions. You know, it's why is this inconceivable? Why isn't the public outrage?
Well, that's absolutely right. That's absolutely right. But again, the news is withheld from people so they don't think about it. But I would say to you, Ian, it's no longer amazing to me, but at one time it was both amazing. and wonderful to discover that just in the city I live in, there are many, many Jews who are as outraged as I am about what's going on in occupied Palestine. And over a year ago, there was a group that invited me to talk with two other people on what was happening. They had the advantage of me. They had been there. They had been there, so they saw firsthand. I've never been there. I've only been able to write about it from what I learned. I think I can form very strong images in my mind. Only left out of them is what I haven't seen with my own eyes from having been there. But it was wonderful to be part of this. And there weren't just Jews at the meeting that they had, but there were a lot of Jews involved. And these are good people who do understand. And the way you do it is you're concerned and you take the trouble to find out what's going on, which is so easy now. Anybody with a computer can be connected to the world, and you can know what's going on. Turn off your television set and get connected to what really is happening, and go for the most important things, because these things affect our lives. What's happening in Palestine and in Iraq and Afghanistan, it reflects on what's happening right here.
For sure.
We have another break, and the hour flies, Ian. Let's take the break, and we'll come back, and I'll let you finish up with some final thoughts. We'll be right back.
This is RVN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back again, still on with Ian Douglas. Ian, you finish up. We have just a few minutes left. Your final thoughts on the tribunal and whatever else you want to pass on to listeners.
I think my final thought is to try to encourage people who are feeling the pain of this financial crisis to understand that in many ways their struggle is very similar to the struggle of the people of Iraq and of Iraq as a country. You know, here is a country that was essentially founded on public welfare, that was against imperialism, that was for unity among the people, that was secular, that had the possibility of a real substantive democracy, and has been destroyed by the forces of global capitalism and the global military and the U.S. military complex, industrial complex. You know, the exact, in a sense, of course, we cannot compare the two. I mean, in Iraq, there is a genocide direct, but by force. But the same project that the Iraqis have faced directly and are resisting and have defeated, in reality, directly. It's the same thing that we call neoliberalism, that we call neoliberal globalization, that is destroying communities in the West, that is targeting people individually, that produces for them conditions of life which are impossible. And so I encourage people to understand that link, because when they understand that link, they'll understand that there's a far greater struggle happening over which Iraq is the strategic core and the front line, and they can become more informed, because it then becomes part of their own personal struggle for their own existence, for their own dignity, for their own happiness and well-being.
Oh, absolutely, Ian. And you could think of maybe a different sort of genocide going on here, not genocide through killing people, but literally stealing their wealth and their futures.
It's an economic as well as a cultural genocide. You speak of the media and the entertainment and the distractions and so on and so forth. If this is not stealing from people the possibility of their life, if it's not denying in reality their existence, you know, and then I don't know what it is. What's happening in Iraq is part of a global movement, which is, a historic movement of the right and of military forces, reactionary media forces, reactionary political forces. And so I think all of us should object and refuse it. And in refusing this, we stand in solidarity with the Iraqi people, with the Arab people, with the Palestinians, and with all of the people of the global south.
It really is all humanity, Ian, against these people who want to destroy our lives for profit. It doesn't matter how much they have, how much wealth they have. They want to use wealth to get more wealth, and it's a zero-sum game. The more for them, the less for us. So they're taking everything they can get, and they want more and more and more, and they end up really, really just sucking the life out of us. We really need to marshal together to stop them. We can do it. I mean, there are a lot more of us than there are of them. They worry about us. If we awaken, we're a superpower. They can do nothing against. And it's high time that we began thinking like that. Otherwise, it's a very dark future ahead for an awful lot of people.
For sure.
Ian, I think we're just about out of time. They'll be breaking away momentarily. I want to thank you for coming on. It really has been wonderful, and I hope you'll give my best to Dirk and others that you get together with at the tribunal.
Sure, and I hope that we can continue our cooperation, which is vital. You know, we have to find more and more people who are interested, that can take part, that can...
Oh, indeed.
And understand.
Please stay in touch, and I'll do anything I can on my end. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sheila.
Join us again tomorrow. We'll have another live program.